Hey there, those of you who like cars enough to push the play button on yet another...
Kevin, another ineluctable episode of V8 Radio.
Ineluctable or inelectable?
Well, that would be unelectable, but ineluctable, meaning unable to be resisted or avoided. Inescapable.
Wow. There you go. We're basically the Chinese finger trap of automotive podcasts.
Nice. Nicely done.
Thank you for joining us here on the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Osteen, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Ubal Clark. He's looking at me like, yeah,
here I am, buddy.
You're right.
That is correct.
Just like always. Right on. And I think we have a lot of ground to cover here today, but before we trip right into all that stuff, those listeners who are astute and kind enough to come back more than once are well aware of our tradition we have here on the podcast, in which we start each episode with an automotive trivia question.
Yes, we do. And yes, I did prepare a trivia question for you today, Kev.
Right on.
And well, for our listeners.
We'll ask the questions in the beginning, and then we'll answer them at the end, much to everybody's disappointment. All right. I guess you go first. What do you
Here
got?
Here we go. I got a nice easy layup for you today.
Oh, yeah. Right on. Could use it.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Kevin and listener, which subsidiary of General Motors established in 1985 was discontinued in 2010?
Ooh. That is a great question.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
A subsidiary that was launched in 85 and then canned in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it reminds me of a paper I wrote in school.
Really? Do tell.
Yeah, and I think it was before that, 83 maybe, 82, 83.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, it was my... whatever, fourth grade, fifth grade, English, like end of the year assignment, this big giant thing. People are writing like Africa reports, you know, and and history stuff. And of course, I read a thing called The Car.
Ooh, nice.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, I tried to delve into my even limited knowledge of history at that point, but start off back with, you know, Carl Benz and Henry Ford and through the years. A couple of looks at current designs. I think it was 85, maybe 45. And project into the future as well. And in the future was coming a brand new division from General Motors that was celestial in name.
Go on.
Yes. And I remember this vividly because somewhere I actually have this report. But I tried to draw a picture of what the Saturn was going to be.
And, yes.
And I remember the caption, and it said, you know, the first you know, sketch that I drew was like 1984 Oldsmobile Delta 88. You know, just basically a box with two wheels underneath it.
Sure.
And then my Saturn thing, which had like a forehead-mounted arrow going forward for some reason, you know, like a spaceship. But the caption said... GM's future Project Saturn, lucky to ever be released at all.
Oh, wow. Harsh.
Yeah. Well, my teacher didn't get it. She just,
oh, really?
She's like, what? You know, there's a big red question mark on written on that on my paper.
See me after class.
Yeah, basically. And she's like, what the heck is that supposed to mean? And I'm like, well, you know, automotive experts... they're not really sure that they're going to get this thing off the ground. So, and she's looking at me like, you think you're some fourth grade automotive industry analyst and that you can write that garbage in this garbage that you've turned in as a paper. Very nice.
C plus.
Oh, if that. So my guess would be Saturn.
Saturn. Now, is that your final answer?
Yeah, this time I kind of think so.
All right, buddy. Duly noted. And we'll find out at the end of the show if you're correct.
I'll step out on a ledge.
All right.
All right. Mr. Q, you have not fully utilized all of the options on the Wheel of Automotive Trivia.
That is correct. Well, there's quite a few options.
There was originally six, I think. And we've got a few left.
Yeah, I think we should have about four left, I think.
Yeah. So go ahead and pick a number, and I will reveal the corresponding question.
Let's pick door number one, Monty.
This is a good one. Right. And it kind of actually seems to fit in with Monty.
All right.
Back in the day, and this was a range of time, I'm going to say from mid-70s to 90s, and possibly later. But at one point, there were four different designer edition Lincolns made. What were they? So I'll provide you some context. I think the most famous one was the navy blue and white two-tone, like Mark V's, if you remember those. They had a faux padded convertible top, like a Phaeton, white interior, and they're white with navy blue down the sides.
Man. Come on, man.
And they were all famous designers.
Okay. So, from the 70s through the 90s, maybe later, four designer Lincolns.
Yeah, and the parallel universe would be like the Eddie Bauer Explorer.
Well, right? Thanks for that, because that was going to be one of my guesses, but apparently not now.
Well, you gotta think Lincoln, right? Lincoln people, they're not out camping and outside. They're inside and they're air conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At least they were in the mid-70s.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So designer series one, we'll say the Gatsby.
Ooh.
All right. Two.
The Gatsby. Now, yeah. All right.
Like number two, let's see. We'll say the Lindbergh.
These are excellent names.
Why, thank you.
Well, however, I'm not sure that my question came across as clearly as it needs to. These are all named after famous designers. They're designer editions.
Oh, after famous design. I'm sorry.
Right, like
okay.
Eddie Bauer is.
Okay.
Orvis edition, something else.
Yeah, all right. Shoot. All
so
right,
while I would designers. Love to drive yeah. around in a Lincoln Lindbergh.
And who wouldn't? They're Gatsby flying out of the Mark showrooms. Hey, yeah. oh, somebody stop me. Okay.
Jeez, that was bad.
All right.
We just call it the Lincoln Chuck.
Okay.
All right. Four prominent designers, fashion people, you know.
Yeah.
Of the time.
I'll say the Calvin. No, not the Calvin Klein.
No, hell no.
No, absolutely.
Or maybe.
No. Halston. I'll say the Halston.
Halston, nice.
The Yves Saint Laurent. Mm,
that was a good smelling guy, that Halston.
Right.
Ooh, Yves, nice.
Yeah.
And how I got to spell that? I think it's Yves.
Something like that.
Stlaure. Yves Saint Laurent.
Yes, that, him, that yeah. guy.
Yves Saint Laurent. All right, two down.
Let's see, who was... who's that designer that was shot by Andrew Kuhninen?
Oh, you know who shot him?
Yeah, I know who shot him. I can't remember the guy's name.
Today in Miami, blank was shot by Andrew Kunanen. Was it Miami? I think it was.
Yeah, definitely. Then he was on the lam for so many days, and then they, you know, they found him.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, come on, Michael.
Well, you got one more, so you can come back to that one.
Okay. I'll say the Donna Karen.
Donna Karen. That's of DKNY.
Of DKNY fame.
Fame. There you
yes,
go.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which is not Dickney.
No.
It's DK. You don't read that. You spell it out. It's a good thing she wasn't from Maine.
Yeah.
Because that would have been Dick me.
All right. All right. Who did? Andy?
Mm-hmm. 75% complete at this point. And you're typing. Are you looking this up?
No, I'm looking Gianni Versace. Gianni Versace. Uh-huh. That's who he
did
killed.
Did you type in Kunanen? And
I just who did Andrew Kunanen kill?
I guess that's allowed.
Yeah.
Versace. Who was it? Gianni? Gianni?
G-I-A-N-N-I. Versace, yeah. All right.
All right. Halston, Ives, St. Laurent, DKNY,
Donna.
Gianni Versace.
Versace.
All right. Excellent. Probably all found in Cue Ball's closet in some form.
Dude, that's a secret.
Not anymore.
Nope.
Our listener knows.
All right. So, yeah. So, yeah. Final answers.
All right. Dig it. All right. So, you recently took the GTO out to a major event.
I
My
did.
Gosh.
I took the GTO out to the 30th annual Indian Uprising All Pontiac Show, and held by the Cruisin' Tigers All Pontiac Club out in the wonderful town of Crystal Lake, Illinois, over the weekend.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it made it there and back, barely, but it made it.
Barely?
Well, at a flat tire when I got out there.
Oh, so, man.
So luckily my spare had air in it, and I had my original stock jack that worked like a champ.
Well, that's good. Yeah. GM engineering right there on the bumper jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
The bumper mounts like bow or anything? Did it settle as it was lifting?
Huh. No, it was fine. It was great. I was pretty happy about it. But, you know how car guys tend to help other car guys in need. I was,
for sure.
I just put the spare on. I was, I threaded the lug nuts on, and some guy came up with his Milwaukee half inch impact. He says, "Will this make it a little easier for you?" I said, "Absolutely, nice. It will."
Yeah, cool.
So I tightened up all the lugs with that. And, I mean, all in all, start to finish was a 10-minute job, and, it was nice. Super easy. So
yeah. I think we talked about those tires.
Yeah. Oh yeah. These tires, I had no business being on these tires at all. I mean, they're, I'll put it this way. The date code is 3 digits, not 4 digits. Like they started to after 2000.
Yeah. Yeah. So those suckers go back quite a while.
Yeah, they do. They're vintage, just like the whole rest of the car.
Right. They were contextual, but.
Yeah.
So, weather wise and temperature wise, the car did okay?
Yeah. It was. The whole way there, it was just a tick under 190 all the way there and back.
Nice.
Yeah. I took the back roads going up there. Just nice, easy driving. I took the expressway coming back because rain was coming in quick, but I didn't avoid it, unfortunately. But,
it's a real car.
It's a real car. And thankfully, I just replaced the windshield wipers recently. So
there you go.
Even better.
And were you? So did you have your little deflationary incident on the way up or the way back?
While it was sitting at the show, it just slowly lost air. Yeah.
It just petered out right there.
Yeah. Well, and I knew that it was, It had been doing that for a while, but usually it would get a couple days out of it. But I filled it up on the way there. I'm like, I should be good. Yeah. And about 2 o'clock, I saw it. It was just about all the way down. I'm like, son of a biscuit. All right.
Yeah, here I'm in the doing middle this. Of the Indian Uprising, yep. A national event.
Yeah. Yeah, so I rolled the dice. I lost. What can I say?
That's right.
But like I said, luckily the spare was aired up and the jack worked and everything was cool.
So. Okay, so a slow leak kind of thing isn't as dramatic. It's not like the thing came apart on the highway.
Right, exactly.
Because quite honestly, if it did that, I would have a hard time driving home, even with the spare, thinking about the other three.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if this one just had a slow leak or something.
And I checked it looking for a nail or any kind of foreign object lodged in there, and there's none. It's just so old. It's just not holding air anymore.
Yep. Yeah. So, it just had it.
Yep. It's done. But it was a really great show. A lot of cars show up. About 500 plus cars showed up.
Wow.
And this was the first year of this new venue. It was held at this place called Pheasant Run in St. Charles.
I've been to that one.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Pheasant Run was shut down and is not going to be opened up again. I think it's going to be torn down and something else is going to go in there. So they had to find a new location. So they found this Crystal Lake Holiday Inn that would hold everybody. They have indoor parking as well. And they have parking lots that hold everybody. And they also had grass parking as well, which accommodated everybody nicely.
They have a pool?
No, I don't think so. I didn't see one.
Go into the Holodome there.
That'd be great.
That would have been killer, you know?
It would have been.
I'm sure there was some cool Pontiac station wagons there that could have had the whole road trip vibe going. You know?
There were some cool Pontiac station wagons there. There was even the Monkey Mobile was there.
And if I'm not mistaken, somebody posted it was the Monkey Mobile.
The Monkey Mobile. The legit 1966 GTO Dean Jeffries built Monkey Mobile.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I took a few pictures of it and got a good look at it, and it looks nice. For as wild as it is, it's a pretty cool looking car.
Yep, so. And I think we've touched on that one in the past. It's either a love it or hate it thing. And if I look at that as just like a cool, crazy car, it's great. If I look at it as a GTO, I'm like,
Yeah, I get it. I get
Somebody did that like down the block and said, hey, look what I did in my GTO.
Check me out.
Yeah. I made a Conestoga wagon out of it.
Yeah, for real.
I probably wouldn't be that big of a fan.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, you know, a lot of those 60s TV shows where the character had the custom car that matched the character, you know.
Yes. So
of course, the monkeys had a mobile, you know.
Absolutely. That looked like that.
And I guess your buddy, Mr. Wangers, had a little something to do with that.
I'm sure he did. I don't remember the stories, though, unfortunately.
I'm pretty sure the marketing genius that he was got a GTO placed in that show. I can only imagine what he thought when Jeffries did his magic.
Well, I don't think Pontiac was very happy about it. But I'm not sure what Jim Wangers thought about it. But I'm sure he has a book that talks about all that.
I do notice, I'm pretty sure that as crazy as the mods are in that car, I think it retains the GTO badge, doesn't it?
On the front it does, yes.
In the
grill.
So you would think a customizer that was going to cut something up that much would have ditched all the badging, but that was probably part of the deal.
Probably, yeah, for the brand placement, the product placement.
Right, so people don't confuse it with a Studebaker Starlight or something. No, pal,
because let's be honest,
a GTO.
You could have.
For sure, yeah.
Which is pointy as that nose is.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So there was some other pretty high-end cars at that thing. I mean, it wasn't just 500.
Oh, no. Pontiacs. There was some really hot dynamite cars there, and there always is. Even newer cars, like they pretty much have two classes, like 1900 up to 1979 or 1980, and then from there to 2010. And the trusty GTO remains, its winless streak remains intact.
Oh, fantastic.
At every show it's ever been in.
Well, you don't want to break tradition.
No, man. Absolutely not. Well, I knew the weather was coming, but I decided just to stay just for the awards. And once they were going through, they give away a lot of awards at that show. They give away a bunch of honorable mention plaques and then a ton of first place plaques. And it's all based on participant voting.
Okay.
And so the top five cars get best of show, then everything from there down to maybe 75 gets first place plaque, and then the rest of like maybe the next 100 or next 25 get the honorable mention. So I'm hearing these honorable mentions be given away, and I said, I know that car. That car's way nicer than mine. God, there's no way I'm winning anything in this one today.
You're thinking, don't pick me. I got a streak to protect.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. So once
we speak honorably of your car all the time, as we mentioned it. So
yes, we do, and I appreciate that. So once they got through the older class first place blacks, I'm like, got a motor, got to beat this weather. So, yeah. But it actually, man, it rained pretty hard too. But I saw some other cars on the road from the show on the street. Going to the expressway too, which is really cool. You always like seeing some cool, nice classics. Nice 68 Firebird, another 67 GTO convertible was driving around.
Nice.
Yeah, really pretty car.
It's nice to put the show on the road.
Yeah, how about it?
Yeah. So anything that really got your clock spinning when you were there?
I really like 8-lug big cars. When I see those, with a 421 tri-power, you know, the works, it kind of really gets me going a little bit. So I do like looking at those.
Yeah, especially the 4-speed cars.
Mm-hmm. All day.
Yeah, all day. Those are cool. Right on.
Yeah.
It sounds like a great day. Is that a multi-day show or is it just a single?
It is. It starts Friday and then Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have an all-makes mega cruise in on Saturday. So any car can come out and hang out.
Nice.
Just for the evening. It's a great, great show. That mega cruise in is not to be missed.
Right on.
Yeah.
Demonstrating the inclusive spirit of our friends at Pontiac.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, and they had some seminars with guys like Don Keefe.
Oh, cool.
Rocky Rotella. Mm-hmm. This guy Dennis or Jeff Dennis was a designer for General Motors for a lot of years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, cool stuff. And they're just talking about their experiences, throughout their whole time with the hobby and what they think is how they see the hobby forming in the future. It was like an hour and a half long talk. It was great. They took questions from the crowd, and it was terrific.
Were there people still holding up the "Bring Back Pontiac" signs? And...
No. Okay. No, they know it's gone. What's an interesting note is at Norwalk, Ohio, they have the Tri-Power Nationals there, and that was the largest single brand car show ever to date.
Wow.
Bigger than any Super Chevy show.
Really?
Bigger than any other. Yeah, it was. This year was the largest show.
Bigger than the Mopar show at Carlisle?
That's what they're saying.
Did they say how many cars?
No, they didn't say how many cars.
Because somebody told me there was 3,200 cars at Carlisle from the Mopar show.
That's huge.
And it was, I don't know when the Tri-Power Nats was.
It was last weekend. Last weekend.
So, the Chrysler Carlisle show was a month ago now almost. So, it may have topped it if it came in the mid-3,500 range.
Yeah. But that's amazing. A car brand that's been gone for 11 years now is still growing. The fan base is still growing and people are still participating that strongly in it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, and especially because it tends to weed out the less desirable. So I'm sure you didn't see many Aztecs at the Indian uprising. You might have seen one, which might be kind of cool, but you know, so the good stuff is rising to the top and gaining notoriety. And
did see some nice Fieros, even some nice W body Grand Prix were there.
Yeah,
that looked really good. You know, later model Trans Ams, which always are eye catching. Yeah, I mean, just so much great stuff. I mean, just from bone dry, you know, Concours original to just modded out with the blower sticking through the hood and side pipes and just craziness. And every one of them are cool.
Any cool Grand Prix of the, you know, 69, 70 era?
Yeah, actually, you know, there's another podcast, Pontiac Talk, that's hosted by a gentleman named Mark Zander. And he has kind of right now it's a murdered out 69 Grand Prix 4-speed car.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just the interior's done, the engine and the driveline's done, but the body it's like all black primer, and it's getting it ready for paint. It's his last item up for bids.
Yeah.
On that one, yeah, it's a cool car. I ended up parking right next to him.
Oh, cool. Yeah those 4-speed cars are super cool.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's a pretty really rare car.
Yeah, yeah. Along with those Hurst cars and the the trip computer. And
yeah, there was a 69 SSJ there. Just beautiful. Just minty fresh.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great.
Didn't even need the little tree air cleaner, air freshener.
It did not.
Just provided its own mint.
Yeah, and just for perspective, that car got an honorable mention plaque, and it was perfect.
I said, wow.
There's no way I'm coming away with anything in this show.
That was your indicator, huh?
Yeah, once I heard that one, I'm like, oh, man, yeah, all right. Let's just see what happens.
Well, it sounds like a good one. I know it got canceled last year, right?
Correct, it did.
Yeah, so everybody was probably just going out of their mind to go back to that show.
And yeah. Yeah, this year we're seeing a lot of shows coming back and getting great participation. I mean, you probably saw that when you were just at the Street Machine Nats.
The Street Machine Nats and the SEMA Hall of Fame banquet.
Mm, yes.
Because that got bumped last year.
Because SEMA got bumped last year. Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah, everything did. So that
you just came back from that just a few weeks ago, right?
A couple weeks ago. It's been a busy summer, which has been just fantastic between Vegas for the Hall of Fame banquet, and then last weekend at Bonneville. But Vegas was it was wild because the Hall of Fame so that event is it's a SEMA organization gala dinner party, in which they induct or welcome the new board members and council members and whatnot. And then they see off the outgoing chairman and board members and officials from the organization, which is cool because they're all volunteers.
Oh,
whole board is all volunteers and they're all with different companies.
Right.
So, you know, that's part of the big networking effect of being involved in SEMA is you never know who you're going to meet. And work with on a committee or a council or whatnot to try and move the industry along. But then the other half of that is inducting the SEMA Hall of Fame winners for this particular year. And I'll tell you, it was pretty cool because last year, again, there was no party for these people that got voted in last year. So we kind of doubled it up. And showed some video of last year's winners, even though most of them were present, and then brought in the class of 2021. And it was cool. So again, you mentioned a new venue. This was in the brand new West Hall of the Vegas Convention Center.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
That thing is enormous.
I believe that.
Yeah. I don't know how many square feet that place is. But it's... so if you're familiar with the Las Vegas Convention Center, it's all on, I guess, Paradise Road and Convention Center Drive. It's kind of the intersection there. And everything's on one side of of Paradise. Well, this is across the street on the other side of Paradise, basically across the street from the North Hall. And there's a sky bridge to get there. You can walk across. And,
oh, cool.
And that new Tesla tunnel thing pops up over there, too. So oh, really? Have you seen that?
I haven't.
So Tesla, Elon Musk owns what's known as the Boring Company.
Oh, right.
Right. And they drill holes underground. They bore holes.
Right. So,
yeah. And one of his little projects was to do somebody said a mile and a quarter. I don't know if it's quite that long, but it's a tunnel that goes underneath the Las Vegas Convention Center real estate with a couple of stops along the way. So you can get from one hall to the next in this tunnel. And the tunnel, the vehicles are Teslas that, of course, that go through these tunnels. And the goal is to have them be autonomous. Uh-huh. I think today, as they get this thing off the ground, or under the ground, if you will, they're driven. They've got a driver.
Okay.
And it's a big, it's a loop. You know, you get in, you go down the stairs, and you get in the car, and it takes you to the end, and then it turns around and comes back and goes the other way.
Okay.
And I've seen, of course, the tunnel isn't like your New York City subway or L train in Chicago. The tunnel is round. And it's loaded with LED lights, and the whole thing changes colors as you go.
Oh, man.
You know, it's a really high-tech thing. My observation, I haven't been on this, but I've seen some videos. Uh-huh. It's barely bigger than the car.
Oh, really? The tunnel is barely bigger than the car?
It appears that way. And they say you can open the doors, you know, if you need to get out, if something happens. But I don't know if anybody can get to you down in the tunnel. It doesn't seem big enough to get another vehicle or an emergency vehicle. I'm sure it is, but you know, I'm guessing because I don't know if you remember that story. Kelly and I broke down in a tunnel in Colorado one time on the way back from Power Tour.
Really? I did not know that.
You never heard that story? Yes. Yeah, so we lost a ball joint in the Galaxy. We're coming back from Power Tour.
Yeesh.
And the jury's still out if it was assembled properly or a Chinese part or whatever, but we're driving westbound on 70, and we're coming into Glenwood Springs, basically, and there's a tunnel called the Hanging Lake Tunnel. It goes right through a mountain, you know?
Nice.
And boom, we're on the ground. Right front wheel is dragging, throwing sparks behind me. We're
going
65 miles an hour, you know? It's late at night. And within seconds, this tunnel has three lanes going westbound, and then there's a divider that you can't see across, another tunnel shaft on the other side going the other direction. Within seconds, there's these overhead lights that all turned into red X's over our lane so that people coming into the tunnel didn't hit us.
And then
all of a sudden these dudes show up in orange jumpsuits, and Kelly thought they were escaped convicts. But it turns out it was a special branch of the Colorado Department of Transportation. And these guys, between those two tunnels, is this command center where they've got fire trucks and ambulances hook trucks and this big giant, you know, NASA-looking screen display where they're watching everything going in and out of the tunnel. And they saw us, you know, hit the ground.
Sure.
And immediately dispatched their guys out who came, and they picked up the car and brought it into the middle of this command center. While we were kind of cooling off, they gave us a little bit of a tour, but these guys put the car back together and they're like, okay, it's back on its wheels. You know, where do you want to go with it? And I said, well, I was headed towards Glenwood Springs to get a hotel. And they're like, well, it's, you know, it's 20 minutes down the road. We'll just tow it there.
Towed
me there and dropped it off. And then I made arrangements to ship the thing home after that. We actually rented a tow dolly and used a buddy's pickup truck and dragged it home back to California.
Dude, I never heard that story.
Oh, yeah. It's a little bit longer than that, but I'm trying to be brief here. But the guys who worked there were all first responders, EMT, and medics, but they also had mechanical experience. So they could put your fire out, they can set your broken leg, they can fix your car.
Fix your ball joint.
Well, yeah. Darn. And so they called it the Hanging Lake Yacht Club, I believe.
Oh, really?
Their little hangout.
Nice.
So for years, Kelly would bake them cookies every year and send them.
Oh, that's very cool.
As a thank you. So, yeah, it was cool. So anyway, the little Tesla tunnel is not like that. It's just, but it's supposed to save you. You know, you do the, you know what it's like walking from one end of that thing to the other, and now add another giant building. It cuts down on the time quite a bit. So that it's a cool feature. I just have to learn more about it, I guess.
Well, maybe you can take a spin on that when you go to SEMA this year.
Yeah, for sure. So back to the West Hall experience.
Yes.
This is a wide open, it's like an airplane hangar, you know, it's this huge wide open exhibit hall. And I think one of their goals was to have minimal vertical posts throughout it.
Okay.
So you can see like all the way across, and it's like I said, it's like, you feel like Howard Hughes in this thing. It's this giant nice. Thing, but there was no provision to have a formal gala in this giant room. You know, what do? We got this giant room. I think there was maybe 300 or 400 people that attended.
All right.
I could be wrong, up or down. Well, 46 tables times 10 per table. So, you know, almost 500 people.
Yeah.
And the production staff that put the event together did this amazing job of putting up a room inside the room.
Oh, cool.
So right off the entrance doors, they set up a system of, you know, what we call pipe and drape, you know, pipe frames with drapes that hang down.
Yes.
That you see at, you know, banquets and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And made the perimeter of the room like that. And then overhead, because if you look up, you're looking up, you know, 75 feet or so to the truss.
The trusses, yeah.
Ceiling. So they dropped bolts of cloth and draped those.
Ah, nice.
Low enough to make it feel like you were in a ballroom instead of a warehouse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they had their own lighting grid and you know, gobo lights that project logos and stuff. And it was all blue and silver and the color. You know, today's LEDs, the lights all change colors and stuff.
Right.
I want the room to be red. Bam, the whole thing turns red. Whatever.
Bam, room's red.
Yeah, exactly. And a killer audio system and big screens on the wall and, you know, the stage and the whole thing. So it was beautiful. It was really super nice. And most people that attended had no idea that that wasn't like a permanent room.
Really?
And because I was working it, I had to go backstage, if you will, around the back. And it's like, wow. You don't go through the curtains. You know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Behind the curtains, yeah. For real.
So it was quite an honor. It always is to work with the organization. But this time, they let me basically write the whole script for the whole evening.
Nice.
Outside of the speeches, of course, given by Chris Kersting, the CEO, and the incoming chair and the outgoing chair and whatnot. But as far as the Hall of Fame, so when they get to the Hall of Fame people, we do about a two-minute presentation, if you will. And I wrote all of those. And then in the meantime, on the big screens, you're seeing images that correspond, you know. So one of the people that got inducted was Rick Love, our buddy from Vintage Air.
Vintage Air, yeah.
And his story is, you know, as a kid, he grew up, his dad used to work on people's cars at night in the garage, you know, after hours, just kind of a side gig. And and then there was a dirt track racer that lived down the street. And, you know, so Rick was always involved with cars. And he had this 39 Chevy that he picked up in high school. And, you know, that was his hot rod. Well, they had pictures of that thing, you know, in the background.
Oh, right on.
You're telling this, you know, kind of the whole life story. And it really is kind of a biography, basically, of who these people are. And it was pretty cool because we did one read through ahead of time with everybody that had anything to do with the event. This Jamie Erickson is the person in charge of this event, and she's super wonderful to work with. She's so nice. And then Chris Kersting, the CEO of SEMA, and some of the production people and others and whatnot. And we did this Zoom call read through the whole thing. And I was expecting, I didn't really know what to expect because again, I kind of wrote this and I patterned it after a previous year as far as the show flow.
Sure.
You know, how the timing went. But I was kind of expecting to read through this and then they would go, okay, that was great. throw it out and we'll start again. This time we're going to hire a real script writer. but we got through with really minimal changes. So it was like, okay, you know, nice. Good. And one thing that Jamie said that was very, very complimentary is she said, after hearing those Hall of Fame biographies, she said, I know exactly why each one of these people belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Perfect.
Because of the way it was presented, which was great. Yeah. That's the goal. I not everybody knows these people.
Right.
Know? So, and it's not like, then in eighth grade, Rick joined the baseball team. You know, it's all industry stuff. And I'm fortunate to have known him for over 20 years. And then Carl Schieffer, who I've known for a long, long time as well. And then a guy named Bob Moore, who I did not know, but he is kind of the father of product data, working with the SEMA organization in the aftermarket. So a lot of these companies, you know, they start selling parts online, but Amazon wants all the data to be formatted a certain way so you can upload it to the Amazon selling machine.
Sure.
And his example was great. He's like, so you on your iPod or your MP3 player, you got a Bruce Springsteen song. You probably have several. One's in there under Bruce Springsteen. One's under Springsteen Bruce.
Bruce.
One's under Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. One is under Born in the USA. One's under the Boss. Yeah, so he's like, so you got the same thing in there six, 10 different ways. Well, that's what these companies were up against because they don't know, a lot of these companies weren't sophisticated enough or didn't know the standard of how to format all this data.
Right.
He solved that. And then all of a sudden, e-commerce is far easier. So that's a great thing to get in the Hall of Fame. You know, it's very well worth it.
Well, yeah.
And I did not know him before, so it was neat to get his story. But then, of course, the last one was our friend Jesse Combs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really something because, and we've touched on this before, but Jesse, I knew her, you know, I didn't talk to her every day for sure, but I knew her, you know, we worked together and I'd see her every year and at different events, you know, here and there. And one thing that was really cool is that if you talked to her once, you knew her.
Gotcha.
There was no,
she was genuine.
Yes. You didn't have to get to know Jesse Combs. You talked to her for 5 minutes and her mom said she had a very disarming personality.
I gotcha.
And it was straight to the point, you know. And her accomplishments in the industry are huge, you know, and from growing up in a family that raced motorcycles and her grandmother raced stock cars and stuff in South Dakota to going to Wyotech and learning how to weld. And I mean, she learned how to weld at home, but learning how to, you know, build stuff and do mechanical work and whatnot. Right. And then her kind of first big breakout was building a car for the SEMA show.
Really?
The Wyotech people said, we're going to display this. Let's pull this thing together. So she was part of that. And while she was there displaying this 64 Mercury, people are like, yeah, so who built it? <You know? laughs> And she's like, well, I did, you know? Yeah, no, really. and that was, you know, unfortunately, kind of a thing. So part of her mission was to not have to not raise an eyebrow to say if some girl, you know,
right,
did something in this, you know, male dominated world. And you know, today I think our age group is and younger are far more gender blind, you know, than some of the old guys, if you will.
I would agree with that. Yes.
You know, because I see it in our shop. Some guy will come in and he's in his 70s and, you know, Kelly will be standing there and he'll be like, okay, where's the boss? And we all point to her. And, okay. You know,
no, where's your husband?
Yeah, right. He's not the boss. So in her case, it was only after that she got her deal with Extreme 4x4 and became a TV star. And, sure. and uh, went on to do some pretty cool stuff. She was the only female Grand Marshal of the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally ever.
No way. Wow.
Right? And this is a, you know, it's the biggest Harley thing in the world.
Sure.
And they recognized that she was the real deal. And, of course, launching her her real deal, you know, product line and working with Lincoln Welders and, you know, all these different companies that she worked with because she had... you know, all these killer ingredients. She had great ability. She was tremendously creative. She was a fantastic communicator. She looked great. And her set of ideals was what I, you know, kind of value the most. And that's, you know, one of her quotes was, "You can do it because you can do it." Right?
Nice.
So anybody around her, she helped instill a sense in them that they could do it. I don't care. You want to go race the Baja 1000? Yeah, you can do it. Go for it. Get over whatever it is you're worried about and just get off your ass and go do it.
Oh.
So she did Baja 1000. You know, she did, she was called the Queen of the Hammers because she won the King of the Hammers event in certain classes and did all these things. So she was certainly not just somebody on television reading cue cards.
Right. She was legit as legit gets.
Right. And that's why I thought it was so cool that she got voted into the Hall of Fame, because she totally deserves it. And not just because she did work for SEMA or she was on television or she was a she in this, you know, male world thing, which is coming apart, I think. But so for her acceptance, her mom and her sister and brother were there. And her older sister, I don't know, she's a couple of years older than Jesse, but obviously the same DNA.
Really?
I mean, she looks That's like killer. Her. She talks like her. I mean, it was crazy. And she's not in the automotive world, so, you know, nobody's ever really met her in our circles. In fact, but she's got the same kind of level of determination. She was a CPA. And recently just said, screw it, I'm going to med school. And now she's plowing through med school. She's going to be a doctor. Yeah. Right?
Jeez.
So this overachieving, you know, thing is big with the Combs women. You know, they just figure out this is what I want to do and go.
I love hearing that.
Yeah. And it was cool to talk to her because we had a lot of questions, you know. So Jesse puts up this image of being, you know, pretty easygoing and pretty, you know, happy-go-lucky, if you will. Things seem to go her way a lot. And, you know, is that for real? And she's like, yeah, you know, since she was a little kid. It was almost frustrating how well everything went for Jesse. You know, she just kind of made it happen. And if it didn't work out, she didn't make a big deal out of it. She just figured out a way to make it happen. So that way it seemed like everything was going her way. So I carefully wrote the intro speech for Jesse in a manner that I thought would be, I don't know, I guess what I would want to hear. It certainly wasn't her funeral and it wasn't a memorial. And we weren't there because she was gone. We were there to recognize and celebrate and continue on and perpetuate what she was all about. So her, somebody was telling me that they were sitting at one of the tables and what I wrote was all in active language. She is, and very little she was. And, this one guy didn't know who she was and he leaned over and said, what, did something happen to her?
What?
And they're like, yeah, she died going for a world land speed record. And he's like, oh. It seemed like it to a degree, but, you know, he never said.
Right.
And that was done on purpose. And
good.
Jamie Erickson said that she really appreciated that. You know, this wasn't supposed to be a downer. It was supposed to be
uplifting, kind of
a rah-rah. Even though there were a few wet eyes in the room, you know.
Of course.
Included.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I kind of... You remember the old cartoon where they had like the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that Jesse was a devil or an angel. But I will say that to me, she has a little influence that appears like that every once in a while, where you almost kind of, she kind of kicks you in the head and says, go get this done. You know, go do
nice.
It. And I'm trying to listen to that more and trying to keep that around. And the big letdown is that physically she's not here anymore. And we all lose because of that. We all need that. We need that person.
Yes.
That's always in your court, on your side, especially one that can do awesome stuff. So she proved it. And she's like, hey, if I can do this, anybody can, you know?
That's amazing. I never had the good fortune to meet her. I just, you know, lived vicariously through others who have, yourself included. And it just sounds like she is exactly what the industry needed through her exploits. I mean, who, besides that one guy who asked what happened to her, who hasn't heard of Jesse Combs?
Right.
I mean, she just seemed amazing. And like you said, just that can-do attitude and not letting anything stop you or get in your way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would love to be more like that, because, you know, I get in my own head and I sabotage myself, and it'd be nice to have that little angel pop up like, no, you can do it because you can do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, you can have that. And like I said, it's not an angel. It's a little blonde chick with a red and white polka dotted, sure, you know, bandana on and a welding helmet sitting on a lowered Harley, who says you can and you should and you will. And I think one of the nicest elements of that whole experience was talking to her brother and her sister and her mom and others who clearly reinforced that, no, that's who she was. The last thing you want is, you know, somebody to go, ah, no, that was just for camera. You know, she's full of crap. And that is not the case at all. So,
good.
Yeah. So it was really cool. And I was tremendously honored to be able to do that. Cause they could have had anybody, you know. And what was pretty wild is that when her and I did that same gala back in 2018, I guess, she had an ad lib on stage where she said, yeah, you know, it's cool. Look around the room here and think that there might be people going into the SEMA Hall of Fame that we're not even aware of. Maybe even right here on this stage.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's spooky.
And I said, well, yeah, speak for yourself, you know. Yeah. And she was giving me that big, you know, wink, you know, the big wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of thing. So she appreciated what that honor meant to be in the SEMA Hall of Fame. And I'm just so happy she got it. It would have been better if she was here, for sure.
Well, you know? All day, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so today there's the Jesse Combs Foundation that still exists, and it's growing, and it provides funds and guidance and resources for women that are trying to get into fabrication, motorsports, you know,
cool,
welding and all that stuff. Yeah. And
that's tremendous.
Yeah. Go to jessecombs.com, I believe, and you can contribute to it or learn about it or whatever. It's needed for sure. And she was working on that for years before she passed. So this isn't like done in memoriam.
Right.
That's another way to kind of keep her deal alive. So it's cool.
That is very, very cool. I'm glad you got to do that.
Me too. And the other tremendous honor at the Hall of Fame was the birthday party right in the middle of it.
Really?
So, oh yeah. So, right. So the show flow is we do some intros, you get some of the SEMA officials to speak, we break for dinner, everybody has their dinner. Well, on every table was a little cupcake with a candle. And when we came back from dinner, there was a speech about the SEMA Cares Foundation, which is another great, great charity, and it's available to those in the automotive aftermarket. If it's almost like Aflac, where if something bad happens, step in and help you out if you're a member of SEMA and you're in the automotive aftermarket. So they gave a speech about that, and then we we spotlighted our friend Ed Iskandarian.
Oh, yes, Ed Iski.
Yeah. So Iski's sitting there in the middle of the room, and they shine a spotlight on him. And I said, well, at this point, you know, we want everybody to grab that cupcake that's sitting in front of you, and there's a candle there. Light them up, because we want to see this whole room light up for Iski, who is – he was the very first president of SEMA.
Was he?
Yeah. And he's been a pioneer, obviously, for – I think we figured out he's been in the automotive industry for 87 years.
Holy cow.
I think he was 13 when he started playing with cars.
Oh, right? My gosh.
And we all owe Iski something, because without his constant innovation of making parts and building racing and manufacturing and marketing and sales and working to, without even really knowing it sometimes, to change the image of hot rodders to racers and mm-hmm. not be dirt bags and advance the technology and everything, and still selling camshafts and developing high performance stuff today at 100 years old.
That is crazy.
So we sang happy birthday, and gentleman Joe Schubeck comes out, and Joe is a drag racer who's got to be in his 80s himself, who's run Iski parts forever since the 60s, and is just a super nice guy. In fact, a few years ago at SEMA, there was the Masters of Engines Challenge.
Yeah, I remember that.
You remember that? Where yeah. people, you know, they voted on the most crazy engine at the SEMA
yes.
show. Gentleman Joe Schubeck won that with a 900-inch
yes.
V8 that he built.
I remember that. Absolutely.
Yeah, he machined
yes.
it and the whole thing, right? So him and Jezla, I believe. So anyway, Schubeck comes out with a cake, which I thought was so awesome, because they didn't have like some person... part of the wait staff that nobody
right.
knows, you know. This is a nice, strong connection to Iski. We all sang happy birthday, and Iski loved it, and it was just so cool. And afterwards, I went down and I chatted with him. I got, a picture with him. And the cake, so everybody had this cupcake, and that's what everybody ate. And Iski's cake is on the table, and it says, happy 100th birthday, Ed. And I said, what'd you think about this this party? And he's like, yeah, this is great. Who's going to take the cake home? And I said, well, I don't know.
I
guess. He's like, well, maybe we need to cut this up, you know, because nobody had any, because everybody had their cupcakes. And I said, well, you know, hey, you could take it home. And he goes, yeah, but whose plate is this? Does this belong to SEMA? I got to get the, we're going to return the plate. And that's just an indicator of what a regular guy.
Sure.
And what a humble, conservative, just a caring individual Ed
sure.
is. You know, because if I make 100 years old, you bring me a plate with a cake on it, I don't care who's taking it home. I'm going to throw it on the ground. I don't care. I'll blow it up in the street.
I'm 100. But, I can do what
right,
I want.
I can do whatever I want. And especially at the level I'm at Iskandarian. I could do whatever the hell. You could pee in the cake. You know, nobody would care. But no. So that's somebody's plate, man. You know, we got
got to make sure it gets back to where it belongs.
Yes. It was really cool. And he was sitting there with Linda Vaughn. And, you know, it's just the Hall of Fame gala is kind of a who's who of the industry. The people mm-hmm. that were there was amazing. And I veered off script a little bit at one point because I wanted to, and mm-hmm. and I kind of did a cardinal sin of essentially stopping the show.
Uh-oh.
But I stopped and I said, hey, how is everybody? You know, and they all kind of looked up like, you know, well, we're fine.
Yeah, we're good. They're and bald said, Dan claps herself.
That's exactly right. Bald F claps herself.
How are you?
That's right. And I said, I really just wanted to take a minute to look around this room, because there's just such amazing people here that I think we need to experience this for a second, you know. And so you know,
nice.
Thanks for the minute, you know, and people dug that. Because
cool.
people don't do that. You don't stop and look around and go,
right.
this is really badass right now.
Yes.
Right here.
I got Ed Iskandarian here on his 100th birthday. How cool is that?
I'm singing to Ed.
I'm singing to Ed.
Right?
I'm telling Ed the plate's going to be fine.
Yeah. I mean, so it was very moving. And Kelly was there. And I have to thank everybody at SEMA for allowing me to play in their sandbox. And not only just, you know, be the numbnuts that reads the prompter, but if you think about it, they entrusted me essentially with the whole program.
Yeah.
Now, they had complete control, and they could have thrown me to the curb and, like, yes, I said, get somebody who knows what they're doing to write it, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. They're like, no, this is cool. We dig this.
Well, so, I mean, you've been there more than once. They know what you're all about. It makes sense that they would entrust you with that, with those duties. So,
yeah, it still doesn't sink in.
Yeah. Yeah. Your imposter syndrome is showing.
Well, yeah, I'm still that same jerk off in the 88 Cavalier on Power Tour with the signature.
The Power Turd.
Exactly. And then, you know, bloop, here I am, you know, at the SEMA Hall of Fame banquet. What?
Crazy. Yeah, that's nuts.
It is.
Yeah. Way to parlay that into a hell of a career.
I'm not sure what happened. I'm just super fortunate, and hope it continues, because it was very special, very, very cool. So,
nice.
So yeah. So we both had good events. That's,
yeah. I would like to have been at yours, but the Cruising Tiger show was pretty cool.
You never know, man.
Yeah. You never know when you're going to be looking at a Hall of Fame inductee. Wink.
That's it. Careful.
Careful now. Careful.
That seems to work.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Well, we've got some trivia questions that people are just, I can hear them gnashing their teeth and chewing their fingernails.
Yes, they are.
They
definitely
want to know the answers.
Yeah, let's do it then. All right. So, Kev, I asked you, which subsidiary of General Motors established in 1985 was discontinued in 2010. Mm-hmm. And you talked about your fifth grade book report.
I got to get that out.
The Saturn. And lo and behold, Kevin, ding, 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 you are correct.
Hey,
it was
right.
The Saturn Car Company, a different kind of car, a different kind of company.
That's right. Different. Remember they had no haggle dealers and all that?
Yeah.
Stuff?
Oh, yeah. This is the price. And they had the composite body shell and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. A friend of mine had one. Actually, my wife, Jenny, had a Saturn when we met.
She's a friend of yours?
She's a friend of mine. Yeah.
Thank God.
She's my best friend, baby.
That's it.
But when we met, she had an SC2 Saturn.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And another friend of mine had one, four-door. And somebody backed into him and just obliterated one of those body panels. It was just,
oh, poof, yeah. The
just plastic everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think, I know you're a Pontiac guy, but I think I see a Corvette in your future.
You think so?
I do, because you have an affinity for the Fiero, which was a plastic body car.
I do like the Fiero.
Jenny with her Saturn plastic. I think the next iteration is Corvette, man.
Well, if I was able to get a Corvette, I would want a 68 Corvette. I've always wanted a 68 Corvette.
I would say 69 myself, but the 8's cool,
right,
too.
Yeah, yeah, my this dude that my mom dated a long, long time ago, his friend had this really pretty red 68 Corvette. Mm-hmm. That he took me out for a spin in one time. And from there, I'm like, yep, this is cool.
How old were you, you think?
I was probably 14, 13,
yeah,
14.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to hook a guy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad that I got one right. Your question was...
I got four wrong.
We won't call it four. We might call it like 25% of each if you got one right or wrong.
All right.
So I said that there were four different kinds of Lincoln designer editions over the years from the 70s up until, I think, the 2000s, maybe.
Okay.
Your guess was Halston.
Uh-huh.
Yves Saint Laurent.
Uh-huh.
Donna Karen.
Uh-huh.
And Gianni Versace.
Versace.
All tremendous designers.
All wrong.
But none of them had anything to do with a Lincoln. In fact... It was Puccini, Cartier.
Cartier.
JaVinci and Bill Blass.
Son of a gun.
Bill Blass was the two-tone blue and white one, I believe.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then the Cartier edition, I think, was silver and maroon or something. The Pacini, I think, those were brown. And the JaVinci ones, I think, were pretty rare. I remember seeing a maroon. They might have come in different colors, but they all had different trim stuff and paint schemes and whatnot.
Jeez, I never heard of Puccini or JaVinci.
Yeah, that question sucked. I'll give it to you.
Yeah, really? You don't say.
It was interesting. I don't know how I landed on that one day to put it on the wheel of trivia questions.
Yeah, because you were probably thinking like, God, I'm pissed off at Mike right now. This is what I'm going to do.
Maybe I was after a really smart blue and white two-tone suit.
Mm.
And I looked up Bill Blass, and he appeared in a 1974 Lincoln catalog.
Enough of that.
Yeah, probably not. All right. Well, this was fun. This went by fast.
Yeah, man. Good
stuff.
At least
it did for me.
Loved hearing about the SEMA banquet. That was great stuff.
Yeah, it was cool. If this was only fun for us, I apologize to the listeners. But as usual, if you did dig it, go ahead and click the old subscribe button. Maybe leave us a nice review.
Maybe. That would be nice.
Yeah. If you didn't like it, you don't really have to invest any time into that. You know?
Leave us a nice review anyway.
There you go. Be a giver.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Be selfless.
That's right. And next time, which is unusual for us to do next time.
Next time on V8 Radio.
You're going to hear Kevin say, "What the heck was that?" as we talk about Bonneville.
Nice. Can't wait.
Just got back and pretty excited. You're not going to want to miss that one. So Bonneville was killer this year.
Nice. Weather looked like it was phenomenal, except for the little bit of smoky haze, but no rain.
Smoky haze, no rain. One night of 80-mile-an-hour winds, but that's another different story. But salt was dynamite, so lots of fun stories.
Huge. All right, good deal.
All right. Well, that's about all I got for now.
Same here, man.
All right. Well, for Mr. Mike Cueball Clark, I'm Kevin Ostie. This is V8 Radio reminding you to keep the shiny side up, and we will see you next time on V8 Radio.